Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Mufti Hassan Ali Suleiman, hope all is well, inshallah.
Wa alaikum salam, Mulana. Yeah, everything is fine. What to do? This is Pakistan. Zindabad.
I'm surprised because many people, like I've got my family who's moved to Canada. So after a few months, maybe the children, it's common. But also now I'm hearing amongst the bigger ones, they also have picked up the accent of the Canadians. So I'm surprised till now you haven't picked up the Pakistani accent.
Yeah, the people are, they get mad at that. when they hear that I've been here for so long, the first thing they want to know is, do I have a Pakistani passport? And I said, why would I give up an American passport for a Pakistani passport? Well, why would any person in their right mind okay want to do that? When they hear that, then they get a little disappointed. So I just remind everybody, I'm Muslim. I'm not Pakistani. I'm not American. That's the thing. I have my Muslim accent. That's it. And my Muslim citizenship. La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah.
MashaAllah, just a personal question. Do you fear going back to the U.S.?
Only if my 95-year-old mother were to say on the phone that if I come back, she'll accept Islam. Okay, that's the only way I would go back.
Okay. All right.
There's no reason for me to go back. It's so easy for me to practice Islam while I'm here. That for me to go back to face all of that fitna, it doesn't make sense to me. All right, better the devil that you know than the devil you don't know. And I know the devil's here. Okay, for the last 30 years, I know how to operate. I don't. No one stops me from going to the masjid, you know, 5 times a day. No one, you know, people leave me alone. A lot of people respect me and feel that, you know, they wish they could be like me here. Whereas in America, it would be completely the opposite. I would have the biggest opposition from the Muslims.
Exactly.
I did before I left. Okay, before I went to madrasa and before leaving America, I was always arguing in the masjid with the liberal Muslims. Okay, if I were to go back now, it would be even worse. So I like it here. People here, they don't practice, but if you yourself practice, they respect you for that. And they'll help you to practice, all right? But they won't practice themselves, but they'll help you. Which in America, I saw that with the non-Muslims. They would help Muslims who wanted to practice more than other Muslims. Because if you're a Hanafi and this person's Salafi, then it's a big problem. But to a non-Muslim, we're all the same. And if they see someone in the park or out on the sidewalk reading namaz by themselves, you know, you'll have people, non-Muslims, stand around and make sure that no one disturbs them or their business or anything like that. It's completely opposite as far as I'm concerned.
Gee, and I'm just reflecting that even here, wherever you are, like South Africa as well, it sounds more like what's happening in America as you've been explaining it, that the more opposition you have is from your own people. And why is this so? And Mufti Saab can give us a better insight on this, especially from this aspect where you've seen life before Islam and then you came into Islam, because a lot of people are using these slogans now here that see the onlooker who is a non-Muslim, he's seeing all this internal fighting. But where they are directing the statement to is to those people who are attempting and trying their utmost best to preserve the teachings, the true teachings of Islam, like parda, like all of these things. But when these people uphold the Sharia and they try to remain firm in this, they say, no, these are the fitna makers. We need to now blend in with the times that we are in, like with the liberals and all of this here. Mufti Saab, maybe you can just share with us some of your experiences and how did you manage to like navigate through all of this here? Because it's a major, major, you speak to the youth out there. Now, the seniors, they've now well rooted in these things. So they've now learned how to deal with it. But you speak to younger ulama, you speak to younger people who are trying, holding on to the rope of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They say, we really feel like we're holding on to a hot coal because opposition is not just coming from the rest, it's coming from our own family members. When we say that, see, we can't attend your gathering because of this ABC haram that is happening there and all the Hindu customs in the Mandi nights and all of this that is taking place, then they say, no, you are breaking family ties. And then when you look at it from this angle, they can do as they want. Nobody's opposing them then. So they say you're just a fitna maker. How do we... Can you just give us some of your experiences?
You have to be, as we say, a duck, all right? When the rain falls, the rain falls down a duck's back and it doesn't bother the duck at all. You have to be like that. Maulana Tanvi Rahmatullah Alayhi, he mentioned the ayah of the Quran that says you don't be concerned with the people that criticize you. Okay, don't be concerned with the people that criticize you, because the people will criticize you like they criticize all the prophets, right? All the Anbiya got criticized, and even after them, the Khulafa Rashidin and others. So the key thing I feel is to have a sheikh. All right, you gotta have leadership. You can't do it by yourself. All right, if you don't have a sheikh, you have to ask Allah to send you somebody that can guide you. Okay, and help you with this. You can't stand alone, because Islam was not meant to be practiced alone. Right, you can't do Juma alone. You can't pray your janazah alone. All right, so many other things. You can't be married to yourself. All right, Islam is a communal, you know, religion, where everybody is involved helping each other. The first 10 years I accepted Islam, my iman was very high. This is something new. I wanted to please Allah, but I didn't know anything. I was Salafi for 10 years. And then I met someone who made me Hanafi without me realizing it. And someone that I learned to trust. We were the same age, from the West Indies. And together we found the Majlis, and then it was following Maulana Desai. So realizing that when you have someone that can give you good advice, like my friend like Maulana Desai, if you just put your trust in them, so you got to have someone you can trust. And if you put your trust in them, you know, you're just trying to emulate them, things will work out. Okay. The friend that I'm talking about, this is back in the 70s and the 1980s. He's the only Muslim that I knew that everybody that he needed work from was Muslim. He had a Muslim doctor, a Muslim dentist, a Muslim car mechanic, and in New York City. And there was only like four or five masjids in the whole city. Now, how did this guy do this? Okay? And all the letters that I wrote to Maulana Desai and his advice and his view was completely different than everybody else's, every liberal Muslim and ignorant Muslim that we had in America. But when I look back at it, I see the only thing that I failed was that I couldn't follow everything that he said 100%. But once I got to the position that I believed everything he told me was correct, then it was only up to me to implement it. Okay? So that is the thing. You got to have somebody else. You can't do it by yourself. It should be your father. It should be the imam in your masjid. But if it's not, even if it's informal, you don't have to have bayat to someone, okay? But you have to have someone who's a little older than you and has been down the road, okay? And you can implement what he has implemented and try to continue on. And then, yes, you should have a sheikh, all right? And that will help you.
Mm. That makes and it solves a lot of issues because just one example, Mufti Saab, that we see over the past few weeks, there is this particular promotion, and I've heard it from many, but I've never heard it. You'll hear it maybe from a person who's got the title of a doctor, or you've heard it from a person of who's got the title of this or that. But a person who's given the title by people as a Mufti, he comes and says that, no, that there is a difference of opinion, and I'll say why I'm bringing this here now. He says there's a difference of opinion when it comes to the tongue and when you're putting it on a private part. So already a person tells me that, a person tells an ordinary person this year who's already, another person is engaging in it, he knows it's wrong in his heart. But as soon as he's going to hear there's a difference of opinion in this particular matter, he's not going to stop there. He's going to go in for that big dive and carry on doing what's that putrid action which he's doing and putting right. the tongue at that particular place, which the tongue was not created for that. So the point of the matter, why I'm saying this here, is when these things reach others and it reaches the ordinary person, he is already enticed to it. He wants to practice on evil now. And that's what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala describes as the quality of the munafiqeen. They order towards evil and they stop the good. Whereas the good, the believers, what do? They stop, they call towards good, they prevent the evil. So when this takes place, it settles in the heart and then they feel that, okay, no, a Mufti has said this. So exactly what you are saying is that if we have someone, who's on the truth, and they say that, you know what, this year we need to combat those thoughts now. So you have this person, it plays a major role. And I see that, mashallah, you've practiced on the verse of the Quran Sharif, where Allah says in Surah At-Tawbah, verse 119, that, Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O people of Iman, ittaqullah, fear Allah, and wakunu ma'as sadiqeen, and be with the sadiqeen. So you went to spend time, you went and you pledged allegiance to Ahmad Sadiq Desai. So sadiqeen, yes. Sadiq. So you have to have, as you yes. said, you've got to have the truthful friend, the truthful person, and something that is lacking on so many levels. And many people carry on.
We're in the age now of fatwa shopping. So the ulama now, I have to be careful like the older ulama were. Okay? Many ulama have blasted Mufti Taqi for making the fatwa on television, okay, and on banking, okay, where his father, Mufti Shafi, rahmatullah alayh, never did this, okay. I had a small book on life insurance and I think organ transplants and like this, where Mufti Shafi with other Muftis got together, got the information from different doctors and whatnot, and then gave a joint fatwa on this. And the one about, I think it was life insurance, which they call now takaful, Islamic insurance. He said that life insurance was haram, okay? And he mentioned at the end that it would be possible to come up with a banking or an insurance type of concept that is Islamic, okay, he said, but he doesn't want to go forward with it because of the condition of the ummah at that time, meaning if there's money on the table and you know it's haram, most Muslims will still go after that money, okay? When we get to the level where we can see haram and avoid it, then he would come out with a fatwa that under these conditions, this can be done and this can be done. He said, but it's a waste of time to do it back then when he was alive, okay, because of the condition of the people. So what about the condition now? All right, when the Prophet said, every generation will be worse than the one that came before it until Qiyamah. So what, well, at least until the Mehdi comes, okay, and Issa takes over. Until then, so what are we talking about now? So yeah, some people have, you know, they've told me that Mufti Zaki, some of his fatwas should have stayed within the Al-Iftar. It should have just stayed on the blackboard, okay, and not reached the people. Stayed amongst the ulama and never come out. Okay, that's a better thing. Because, again, shopping for fatwa was the thing when I first came into the deen in 1974. Okay, there was no madrasas in America. Okay, and we would go here and there, you know, for any fatwa. Anybody that could speak Arabic, we understood that, or we thought anyway, that the person, you know, knew something about the deen. Okay, so mobile oil company. They took a lot of African Americans who became Muslims, but took them to Saudi for 6 weeks, I think it was, 6 weeks or 2 months, and let them learn Arabic. And they came back to America as imams, and almost all of them are munafiqs. I mean, they're all agents for the government. So that's, you know, they work that way. But yeah, shopping for fatwa was the thing. So avoid that. That's another key. Avoid shopping for fatwa. If you are confident that the information you're getting from your particular mufti or your dal ifta is correct, then stick with it. Okay, and try to live it. And yeah, try to live it. So don't blame any other mufti. Blame yourself for not being able to follow the fatwa that you believe is correct.
Mufti Saab, now comes the, you just touched on these issues. We wanted to speak on coke. So you're in South Africa, I sent you that link as well. They are calling back certain amounts of coke because there's a problem with it, and the whole article is there. Our listeners can get it. We'll send it to them as well. I'll share a little bit just now as well about that. But before that, aren't we not supposed to be staying away from coke? And from the beginning, and we're not supposed to engage in drinking this year, especially when people are saying the month of Ramadan is coming, and what are we doing to prepare for it? But aren't you supposed to be staying away from that which is haram? Mufti Saab, you can share your insight.
I agree with that, and that's the hypocrisy of the boycott movement. You want to boycott Coca-Cola? Well, because it's an American company that helps the Jews, all right? And maybe Jewish-owned, I don't know. But the fact is, it's haram, okay? It has alcohol in it. This is proven. That's number one. Number two, if you don't want to go that route about haram, you still think that it is halal, that's your problem. You're wrong, but okay. It's not healthy for you. All right? How many teaspoons of sugar are in one can of Coke? I think it's more than 10. Okay? It's nothing but water, color, and sugar. That's all it is. There's no health benefit in it at all. And the doctor will tell you, even if you are healthy, that it will lead to diabetes. Okay? It will lead to other health problems. So, there's no sense in boycotting it, all right? And on the Islamic end, it's haram, and on the medical end, it's unhealthy. So why are we even talking about it?
And I think you sent me this a while back on your, amongst your own research that you've done, that coke has, it started off with cocaine.
Right. So yeah, we and now they took out the cocaine, but the amount of sugar in it is and it was sold originally not as a beverage or soft drink that you would enjoy at a baseball game or anything. It was a tonic. It was considered a tonic, a health tonic, okay, to make you healthy. Yeah, by putting cocaine in it. But then they took out the cocaine, but they added more sugar, so made it less healthy. So again, the three ways, Islamically is haram, and medically is unhealthy. And then you want to talk boycott, then that's another reason. So I mean, every way you turn, we should be avoiding this. It's not even, you know, an issue.
Exactly. And this year, what we see in using these slogans of halal and using these logos of, we've heard of MBS, we've heard of MBZ, they all said that they want to take charge of the halal industry. So I'm not sure what's the level in Pakistan, but year two in South Africa, even though you see that this year is, you should still ask and do inquiries whether this is permissible to eat or not. And why you should do this is because it's your system. We went to the Hakim Sap, and I've mentioned this a few times on one of on particular programs, that I was just taken aback by what he had to tell me. He said that, you know, you people are boycotting Israeli products, all of that, and saying this and that. But if you go and you see, you hate the Israeli enemy, the terrorists, IDF, the type of forces, and you hate them. But look what you, just one day, sit and ponder over what you are putting in your own stomach. And I'll give you an example. We grew up here in South Africa, always thinking that cereal, when you look at cornflakes, all of this, you see those slogans, it's so beautiful the way they, and you feel like, I am going to be so energetic after this. And people, you hear one or two strange people and you say, those are just conspiracy theorists and all of that, and you don't give them much attention. One day I went to the dentist and the doctor told us, and advising my children especially, you stay away from all these Cocoa Pops and cereals and all of this. Go and see the sugar amount that's in there. Then when you do the research and you see, yes, this is a fact, how then can this be healthy for me? Yesterday I walked in the chemist, yesterday, and I saw in the fridge Coca-Cola. Chemist supposed to be a place where you get cured from, you get medication, and there is a cure for certain things. Unfortunately, you find these instances where the chemist is selling you Coca-Cola. That I found strange.
Okay, so here, we don't call it chemist here, we call it pharmacy. Okay, same thing, right?
Yes.
And at the pharmacy, you can buy cigarettes. Okay? So what are you talking about?
We haven't reached...
And the pharmacist, one pharmacist out of the, in the day shift, they have day and night shift. On the day shift, one of them, he smokes. Okay? there you are. Yeah. You fell victim to the commercialization, the advertising, okay? One of the biggest industries in America is advertising, all right? Look how Nike, everyone buys Nikes, all right? Well, what is it? It's just leather and rubber. I mean, that's all it is, okay? And it costs about $5 to $10 to make a pair of shoes, but you'll pay $300 for it because it has a Nike name on it, which wasn't even made in America. It was probably made in Vietnam or Haiti or some other place, all right? But yeah, and when I was a child, I looked at the same things, and I saw, yeah, Captain Crunch. I love Captain Crunch, okay? And, yeah, later I found out it was 70% sugar. 70% sugar, okay? But they advertise it as, have a healthy breakfast in the morning, okay? So what do they show? They'll show you Captain Crunch or Fruit Loops or whatever, but then they'll show you two slices of toast, okay, and maybe a scrambled egg, orange juice, and milk. Okay, so there's the health benefits there. The health benefits is in the orange juice, it's in the milk, it's in that egg, and it's in the toast with butter. Okay, but it's not in the Captain Crunch. This is what we didn't understand. Okay, have a healthy breakfast. Yes, this is a healthy breakfast, but and enjoy your Captain Crunch. But that had nothing to do with the healthiness.
Exactly. And many years later,
right?
Then.
So you fell for it also.
I did. Yes, and that's why we come on to advise others to stay away from it and learn the lesson. Anyway, Mufti Saab, we will have you tomorrow, inshallah, but that will be earlier.
Inshallah.
We'd just like to have you now and then on this time, because this is generally our time coined for the interviews and that. Make dua for us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.